Welcome to the Eurospace Hub special episode from the podcast Business of Collaboration. Eurospace Hub aims to digitally connect the space ecosystem in Europe, from tech transfer offices to industry, space accelerator networks, research centers, and other universities. Eurospace Hub will allow these actors to easily connect with financial opportunities, from the Horizon Europe framework to space research, space technology, and to accelerator programs. Eurospace Hub will bridge the gap between academic institutions and industry using a collaborative ecosystem and entrepreneurial mindset inside the universities and beyond. Every month, with the Eurospace Hub special episodes, we want to share stories about space technology and research with you. Enjoy the conversation. Today, your host is Jara Pascual, founder and CEO of CollabWith. Our guest is Laura Kreiberg, director of the Max Planck Institute for Astronomy. Laura Kreiberg is an American astronomer who primarily studies exoplanets. Since 2020, she has been director of the Max Planck Institute for Astronomy in Heidelberg, Germany, where she is setting up the Atmospheric Physics of Astroplanets Department. Laura Kreiberg received the Annie Jump Cannon Award in Astronomy. Kreiberg's area of work is the physics of exoplanet atmospheres. One focus is the observation of hot Jupiters and rocky planets by transmission and emission spectroscopy of transiting exoplanets. She is talking about her conclusion that our planet Earth is unique and there is not planet B as a findings with her research on exoplanets. We are going to talk as well in this podcast about the importance to increase conversations and collaborations between scientific communities and engineering communities. Enjoy the conversation. Welcome, Laura Kreiberg, to this podcast, Business of Collaboration, with the special edition of the Eurospace Hub.
Thanks very much. It's great to be here.
We met in one of the sessions in the European Parliament about exoplanets, and you are leading the exoplanets team and research in the Max Planck Institute.
Yeah, that's right. So I joined the Max Planck Society in 2020. As the founding director of the Atmospheric Physics of Exoplanets Department at the Max Planck Institute for Astronomy in Heidelberg, Germany. Starting from scratch, it's a really young and exciting field. And so I've been working to build it up and learn everything that we can about the atmospheres of exoplanets.
So what is your story about becoming an astronomer and why the focus in exoplanets? So what is your story?
Yeah, so I think this is common for astronomers. As a kid, I always had these big questions about the universe. I remember asking my mom things like, where's the edge of the universe and how old is it? And you know, of course, she did not know the answer to those questions. And so I was motivated to study physics in college. I didn't really know that astronomy was a real job. I didn't think you could get paid to be a professional astronomer. But when I was studying, I took astronomy classes and I met some professional astronomers and one thing led to another and now I'm here. I didn't plan on working on exoplanets actually because it was such a popular topic. I felt that there was no clear contribution that I could make, that there were a lot of other people working on it. But when I learned that there was a possibility to study the atmospheres of the planets, I got really excited about that because that's a very complicated and challenging problem. And I thought that I would have good job security working on that, there's a lot of work to do for many, many years.
So what is an exoplanet?
Yeah, great question. So an exoplanet is just a planet that is orbiting a star that isn't the sun. It's short for extrasolar planet. And astronomers have now discovered about 5,000 exoplanets around just a fairly small sample of stars. So based on how many stars we've looked at and how many planets we've found, we think there are actually more planets than stars in our galaxy.
Going from this, as an astronomer, you are doing observations from the Earth, but as well, you send all the missions outside exoplanets. We need to observe them mainly in missions. Why are space missions so important?
Yeah, so you can probably imagine that if we're studying the atmospheres of other planets, if we have to look through our own atmosphere to see it, that can make for some really confusing signals. And so it's often much easier if you just go up above Earth's atmosphere and it gives you a pristine, unpolluted measurement of what the atmospheres of the other planets look like.
Listening to a Eurospace Hub special episode from the podcast Business of Collaboration.
How many different disciplines are involved in one mission? Because if we are looking at the professionals working on a space and observation, they are not only astronomers. And this is the beauty of a space. Like, you have not to be aerospace or astrophysics to work in the community.
Yeah, right. To build a space telescope is an extraordinary effort. So it includes thousands of people all over the world. So it's very international. It's very interdisciplinary. So we need engineers to actually construct the telescope. We need astronomers to know where to point it. So it's really collaborative, really interdisciplinary, and really international.
And what is the main objective of your department? Of the atmospheric physics of exoplanets and the Max Planck Institute for Astronomy?
Yeah, so we're new departments, so I would say that our strategy and goals are still being defined. But broadly speaking, we're interested in exploring the diversity of planetary atmospheres beyond the solar system. So just learning what is out there. We know that a lot of planets are really different from the Earth and other planets in the solar system, and we want to know, what are they like? What are their climates like? Do they have clouds or not? Do they have rain? And we also want to put our own Earth in context. So we're really interested in looking at other rocky planets to learn how often they even have atmospheres at all. We don't know that yet. How often they have water. What the role of our sun is. Is our sun representative of the parent stars of these planets or not? And ultimately, our really big goal is to search for signs of life on a potentially inhabited exoplanet, but that's a long path.
And then doing this research, what do you think are the main needs and issues and challenge from the astrophysics and exoplanets research perspective?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are challenges on many different levels. So I think there are scientific challenges. So being able to interpret any measurement that we make. We know that planets are really complicated. If you look at a planet like the Earth, our atmosphere has been shaped by how much carbon, nitrogen, and oxygen the planet formed with, what gases came out of volcanic activity, how much of our atmosphere might have been lost to space over the 4 or 5 billion years of Earth history. And also the presence of life has dramatically affected our atmosphere. And so all of these factors need to be understood and considered as we observe other planets. But not only that, in addition to these scientific challenges, there are also engineering challenges. So the sizes of the signals that we search for are just unbelievably tiny. Detecting the planets alone is a major achievement, and then making the next step to characterize the atmosphere on top of that is extraordinarily challenging, although I think we can do it. And finally, there are political challenges. So the projects that we have are getting larger and larger. We need lots of funding. They're very international projects, so we have to collaborate across borders, especially to build the next generation of facilities. And so there's challenges there too, but it's also an exciting opportunity to build the bonds between different countries and different people.
I remember you mentioned when we were in the European Parliament, a specific conclusion after your introduction
and presentation about exoplanets, you were saying like our planet is unique and there is not planet B. What are your findings with your research on exoplanets to get to this conclusion?
Yeah, so we've looked at a fair number of exoplanets and none of them are remotely Earth-like yet. So we've looked at a lot of planets that are much hotter than Earth. For example, there are some planets that are so hot that instead of having rain made out of water, they have rain made out of iron instead. So metals are so hot that they can vaporize in the atmospheres of these planets. Definitely not a friendly environment for life, not at all. And we're just starting to push down to planets that are more similar in temperature and size than the Earth. But so far, those are not looking so friendly for life either. And one of the biggest questions for astronomers is whether planets around the smallest stars, we call these stars M dwarfs, are friendly environments for life or not. These smaller stars are extremely abundant. They're much more common than the sun, but they're also brighter in the ultraviolet. They have more flaring. They're generally not as well behaved as the sun. And we think that that could cause a lot of the small planets that orbit them to lose their atmospheres entirely. So this is kind of the elephant in the room, is like, we know a lot of these planets are out there, but we don't know whether they're actually appropriate environments for life to evolve or not. So that's one big thing. The other one is that even if we did find an Earth twin out there, interstellar space travel is not as easy as it looks on TV. So I'm sorry to disappoint all the Star Wars fans and all the Star Trek fans out there, but space, just to put it in a really basic term, space is just really, really big. And so even traveling, even space travel within our own solar system, so going to Mars, for example, is so challenging. And there have been a few groups that have explored how we might be able to send spacecraft to Alpha Centauri, our nearest star. And with conventional jet propulsion, that would take tens of thousands of years. It's not practical in the context of a human lifespan. There have been some more exotic possibilities that were proposed. For example, there's something called Breakthrough Starshot that would take tiny nano craft and blast them with laser light. These spacecraft are highly reflective, and so they would get accelerated by radiation pressure in the direction of Alpha Centauri. But my personal view on that is that if you have a laser that's powerful enough to blast a little spacecraft to Alpha Centauri, you could probably explode a lot of other things in space. And this is still more in the realm of science fiction than it is in the realm of real work that's happening. And so all of that said means that even if we found another Earth-like planet, we couldn't get to it. And so that's a constant reminder that we have to take care of our own planet Earth.
Yeah, totally. And talking about this communication, like just playing this outreach, so communication and dissemination of science and this knowledge transfer and how to translate to societal knowledge is very important. How do you see this process?
Yeah. So astronomers' work is funded by taxpayers. And so I think it's really important that we can communicate what we're doing in a way that people appreciate and understand. There's also the challenge of not exaggerating the results. People are really excited about exoplanets. And so when I talk to journalists, sometimes I get the feeling that they're like, oh, have you found aliens yet? Have you found aliens yet? And so I have to be really careful and say, you know, no, like science is slow, steady progress, like step by step. We have to really build a very careful understanding. Then maybe we get to aliens, but we're not there yet. And so I think it's really important to find this balance between being clear and exciting, but also not overstating what we're learning about the planets.
If you want want to be part of the European space innovation ecosystem in a digital format? Go to our website to read more information about how to join. www.eurospacehub.com.
So I think you mentioned several times during this presentation led by MEP Lina Galvez about the exoplanets. Like one of the conclusions was like the astronomical research infrastructure is highly collaborative research community. And for me, it was like, okay, what are the factors or best practices that we can apply to other industries to learn how to collaborate on research? So what are the main values and how do you organize yourself for this collaboration?
Yeah, it's a learning process. I would say this field of science has grown very fast. And so the collaborations used to be small, maybe 5 or 6 people, and now there are sometimes hundreds. So we often organize by the type of task. So all the people working directly with the data from the telescopes work together in one group. Then there might be another group working on theoretical models to try to interpret the data that we measure. One of the big values is reproducibility. So making sure that multiple groups get the same answer, sometimes by different methods. And that gives us a really strong sanity check that our conclusions are actually correct. And yeah, one of the things that I really like about the collaborations is that we're all motivated by a common goal. So we are trying to understand what the universe is like as best as we can. And keeping our eyes on that prize helps mitigate a lot of conflicts between people. It's generally very respectful discussion. So people say, okay, you know, if you assume this thing, you get this answer. If you make a different assumption, you get a different answer. But the fact that we're kind of all in this together, trying to make sense of all the complicated measurements we make of the universe around us, really helps smooth over any friction that's happening in the collaborations.
Well, in this case, Eurospace Hub, as a digital platform, wants to connect different research space communities and facilitate collaboration among them. What does it mean for you, your work, and your department? This type of project?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest places where we need this type of hub is to connect more of the engineering side to more of the science side, since those communities are typically very separate. And so I don't have any of the same expertise as the engineers do. So I know I have a science question and I can say, here's the specifications for the instrument. This is what we would need to build to measure the thing that I care about. And then on the engineering side, they don't necessarily know the science question, but they know how to build the thing. And I think there is, on both sides, there's a lot of appreciation that we need to talk to each other more, but there isn't always the right forum to do that. So I think these more collaborative spaces are really important to make sure that we keep the communication open between the two groups.
Listening to a Eurospace Hub special episode from the podcast Business of Collaboration.
What does it mean, innovation, for you?
When I hear the word innovation, I think about thinking outside the box, doing something new, not just chipping away at a problem like one little piece at a time, but really going in maybe a different direction that people didn't think about, being creative. And sometimes in science, that can be really challenging because we're all busy and it's easier to just do the thing you've already done. And so I think often the most innovative ideas are coming from young researchers who might be thinking about these problems for the first time and have really creative ideas. But, you know, the more senior you get, the less likely you are to have those creative ideas.
The last question is, what does it mean, collaboration for innovation?
I would say to me, a collaboration for innovation means to just bring together people, like a diverse group of people with different expertise and backgrounds and ideas, and see what comes out. Because I think often if you talk to someone who you wouldn't talk to every day, those are where the biggest new ideas come from.
Always in our podcast, we have very quick questions, very personal ones to know, you know, behind the science test. What does your morning routine look like?
I usually get up around 7 and have a cup of coffee with my husband. We talk about what we're going to do that day.
What is your favorite place for holidays?
Anywhere I haven't been before. I love exploring new places.
What are you doing with your spare time and weekends?
I like to run to relax. I'm an amateur runner. I also really like to have people over for dinner. I love hosting dinner parties and cooking a nice meal for friends.
And the last one, would you like to recommend a book or a piece of music?
Oh, that's a really good question. Let me think about that for a second. My favorite book is always whatever book I read last. A book that I read fairly recently that I really liked is called Hitmakers. And it's the stories of various things, whether it's like music or ideas that got extremely popular and why that happened.
And the piece of music?
I love all music. I actually used to play violin and sing in choirs as well. So let me think of a good one. Okay, you know, keeping it on brand, I got to go with Space Oddity by David Bowie.
Thank you very much, Laura Kaiser, for this interview. It was amazing. I think very inspirational as well for the rest of the population, kids, I think entrepreneurs as well, and our planet.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's really been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, Laura.
Thank you for listening to our Eurospace Hub special episode from the podcast Business of Collaboration. Please share this podcast with your space friends and leave comments on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, or on Stitcher. See you next month for another story and interview. In the meantime, you can learn more about us on www.eurospacehub.com.